This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-952-7870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. If you want a chance to win tickets, just give us a call at area code 517-884-4783. 517-884-4783. That's your chance to win tickets to MSU hockey. We're going to talk a little bit with Rico Beard, and we're going to talk about the pro sports scene in Detroit, Detroit Pistons and the Detroit Lions in the very disappointing season by them. So we'll talk about those two teams, and then later on we'll talk with Jim Comperone about the Spartans football and basketball team. So a lot to talk about today right here on AM 870. So let's bring in our good friend, our guest, Aaron is with us to talk about the pro teams in Detroit. And Aaron, when you look at our pro teams, what do you think of when you think of our pro teams? And we'll look at the Pistons and the Lions. And the Lions obviously had a disappointing season, but we'll get Rico in and get his opinion first. Hey, Rico, how you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you, Earl?
Yeah, doing a little good. Doing a little better, I guess. But the Lions this year, nobody expected a 4-12 season. I mean, we all thought it would be a little bit better than that, even if they didn't make the playoffs. We just thought it would be a better season, didn't we?
Well, you know what, everybody but myself and a handful of people, I kind of saw the handwriting on the wall when week after week, you were just having Lions players playing guest roles on cops, just getting arrested in the offseason. Kind of showed me they didn't know how to handle the prosperity and that the team had achieved. I kind of wondered about the leadership, and I just didn't think that they would play that well this year. And, yeah, they kind of did what I thought they were going to do. It's one of those old things where they started believing their own press clippings.
Yeah, that's really sad. And what about, how do you look at the basketball team? I know that they're in a different situation, but how do you look at them?
Pistons or Michigan State?
Pistons.
You know what? I had to do a couple of games where I got to see them in person. They're not a bad team, Earl. They are not in the upper echelon. They won't be competing with the likes of the Heat or any of the top teams like that. So, you know, I don't expect to see them in the NBA Finals, but they have the makings of a very good young nucleus. I do believe that they may be still another player or two away from seriously contending. They're missing the superstar, and I don't know if they want to necessarily try and go the route that they did the last time they won the title, when they just kind of had a bunch of role players who all bonded together and did well. I guess Chauncey Billups would be your only superstar, kind of. But they really have a good nucleus. If they keep this up, maybe in a year or two, or if they get lucky in the NBA draft and land that next superstar, then, you know, they can compete. Right now, you know, they may be battling it out to see if they can land maybe that 6th, 7th, or 8th spot in the playoffs.
Well, you know, the Lakers, of course, they have the big guy over there, the center, and he hasn't done that much, and I don't know how much you can count on him, but he's the man at the Lakers, and it sounds like he might want to go to New Jersey eventually.
Earl, anybody who followed the Dwight Howard saga knew he always wanted to go to New Jersey. The Lakers jumped in and thought that they would get the next great center, you know, like they've had in the past, with going back to the days of George Mikan and Will Chamberlain, and, you know, then they had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Shaquille O'Neal. they thought that Dwight Howard would fall into that, and he was damaged goods going out there. And talk about just wasting your money. L.A. is actually worse. L.A. could be the first team in a long time that's fired two coaches in the same year. I can't see D'Antoni sticking around and keeping that job.
Well, he might have to quit because he's got a great buyout. So I guess we'd have to see will the Lakers strong enough to fire him and pay off that contract.
Well, it really shows you how well, especially in the professional world, to have good management surrounding you. Because right now, when Jerry Buss was there, that team was a top-notch organization. Now that his son is running it, it's serious. It's like the movie Tommy Boy. This guy is in so far over his head. It's just like you gave a fan a team and just said, make all the decisions you can. It's like the Lakers have turned into his own little personal fantasy basketball team. And you put him with aging and hurt superstars. I mean, what's next? Are they going to try and bring, Greg Oden to the Lakers now? I mean, this team is just bad. I mean, Kobe, if I'm the Lakers, I may realize that my ship is done and maybe try and sell off Kobe and get a bunch of picks and just kind of rebuild, because that's a bad team right now, and it's, I don't see it getting any better.
And, you know, with Greg Oden talking about coming back with Portland, that'll be great for them. But, boy,
he's talking about coming back to Miami.
Yeah, Miami. If he comes back to Miami, that'll make them a lot stronger if he's healthy.
Yeah. He's also talking about coming back next season. And I think Greg Oden is going to win the Lifetime Sam Bowie Award as a guy who he's going to be an answer to a question, just like Sam Bowie was. You know, who was the guy picked before Jordan? It's going to be who was the guy picked before Kevin Durant? Greg Oden.
Yep. Yeah, it's sad, but that's the way it goes, and that's just one of the things about sports when we look at it. When you look at Michigan State sports, you know, we talked with Jim Comperoni, and he sort of looks at the recruiting angle, because he looks a lot at that recruiting. Do you see Michigan State being able to come back and have a good recruiting season after this year, because they've got a lot of holes, especially after the three that left?
You talking about football?
Yeah, football.
I think they can have a pretty they can have a good recruiting class. I wouldn't call it great, but they can have a good one. What helps Michigan State is the fact that they redshirted pretty much every incoming freshman last year. So that gave them a year to get them into the weight room, get them acclimated to college speed, get them bigger and stronger and faster. So that's where you'll see your impact. And then this upcoming class, I only think that maybe two freshmen may actually see the field in the first year. Everybody else, I think, will end up getting redshirted. As far as, Golston, maybe the most expendable of the three. I think that Shalik Calhoun proved that I think he could fill into that spot and do well. I think the biggest hole is going to be Le'Veon Bell, because Coach D'Antonio really didn't have a clear-cut backup running back. So it's going to be an open competition. I think you'll see at least six players all going for that spot. Hopefully, it'll be a little bit better than when Javon Ringer left and we had to go through the Colton Rays and the Andre Andersons before they finally were found Edwin Baker and Larry Caper. But they went through a lot of backs before they finally found them. Hopefully, they can get that back. That's the biggest concern for me. I think this year's spring game may be the most interesting game in Spartan history, because Like the last few years, Earl, it's just kind of been a little show for the fans. But I think this year, you're going to see guys out there really playing this game like it means something, because there are going to be jobs on the line from the quarterback position down to the kicker. Everybody's job is on the line. And I think probably, you know, unless your name is Max Bulla, everybody else's job is pretty much up for grabs.
Yes, and I like the fact that quarterbacks are going to be getting hit this year. We don't really see that very often, but I'm liking that fact that the quarterbacks will get hit and they'll have to make some good adjustments, which they didn't have to do before without getting hit at all.
Right. I mean, you know, live quarterbacks, that's, be careful what you ask for. Because what will be the cry if somebody goes down for the year because they took a hit? I don't think that people will be happy about that. But the quarterback position, I think in the end, Maxwell will end up regaining his job back. I think Cook will push him. I think Tyler O'Connor may end up becoming the backup QB. And then we still have to see with Damian Terry, the incoming freshman. Are they going to try and use him? He's that new mobile quarterback dual threat that Michigan State really hasn't had since Drew Stanton. So, as far as, like I said, every position on that team, there's really nobody who can feel this. Well, maybe a few people can feel comfortable. Everybody else has to come out in this spring game and play, because I think positions are going to be won or lost. April 19th, April 20th, you're going to see a lot of hard hitting and a lot of playing. And, yeah, everybody wants to play. Everybody wants to start. So it's going to be very interesting to see. But your original question with the incoming recruiting class, I only see maybe one or two people. The kicker that they got coming in, I think his name is Geiger. I think he probably will end up playing, because I just don't think that Muma is accurate. He's good for kickoffs, but I don't know if he's good for kicking field goals. You may see John Reschke, linebacker out of Birmingham, Brother Rice, coming in just so they can kind of groom him to be the next Max Bulla. So kind of how Bulla played underneath Greg Jones, I think you may see Reschke playing underneath Max Bulla this year. And, depending on what the tight end situation, Dylan Chimura, son of Green Bay Packer great Mark Chimura, may come in at the tight end position now that Deion is gone, because that's another position where we really don't know what we have.
Yeah, so that'll be definitely an interesting look at to seeing that all these positions are up for grabs, and hopefully they'll fill up. Out and be well, be able to help the Spartans. When you look at this, are you going to have to wait till after the spring game just to see where you think the Spartans might spend or finish up in the season?
I don't know. I think it may actually go until like the first couple of weeks of the season. I don't know what to expect from this team. The only thing I can say is I expect the defense to stay exactly how they are. I expect the defense to come out and be a top five defense again. If that's the case, then, I guess we saw the floor this year at 6-6. I couldn't tell you until they actually take real live bullets. I couldn't tell you what this team's going to look like till maybe after that road game at Notre Dame of what we're going to be looking at this season. You play the schedule game, and their schedule looks to be easy enough that it seems like they could fall backwards into at least nine victories. But after what I saw this year and just some of the questions that I have, I can't necessarily say that, I think that they can just bounce back and have another double-digit winning season.
Yeah, that'll be tough to see, and hopefully they can. Now, what do you think about the basketball team this year?
You got the hiccups.
Yep.
I think you're pretty much looking at a typical Tom Izzo team where you're looking in January and you're kind of scratching your head because you don't really know what to look for, what they have. last night was different because for the first time, the point guards and the guards didn't really do anything. It was all big men. I mean, Derek Nix and Adrian Payne and even Brandon Dawson, you know, they were the scorers. I mean, Appling and Trice and Valentine and Gary Harris. You know, Harris only made one shot. Of course, it was a shot that really kind of iced the game. But you know, we're all still kind of scratching our head. This is a year in college basketball where there's no clear cut team. There's no Kentucky of last year or Carolina of a few years ago where you saw they had at least five pros on the team and they were going to definitely dominate. I think now you're looking at an NCAA that could be probably won by about 15, 16 teams. You could make a case for Michigan State. In order to add them to that, I would say they would have to find more consistent scoring out of either Appling or Gary Harris. But I think that, you know, knowing what I know about the Tom Izzo coach team, they normally start gelling starting next month, and I would look for them to at least be Sweet 16, Elite Eight type of team. And, you know, once you make it that far, you never know who loses, who wins, and, you know, you may be able to luck your way into a Final Four.
That is true, so we'll just have to sort of wait and see with that one. Hey, Rico, I want to thank you for joining us. It's 22 minutes after the hour, 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
The life of a president has always provided rich fodder for biographers. President Obama is no exception. In just one term, dozens have already taken on his story. I'm Celeste Headlee, authors on Obama, the man, his life, his presidency, plus our weekly turn to the opinion page next time on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870. That's Talk of the Nation coming up at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870.
Thanks for joining us this afternoon. A chance of flurries today, otherwise mostly sunny, with a high in the mid-20s. Partly cloudy tonight, a low around 15. Partly sunny for Tuesday, highs in the upper 20s. Then mostly sunny till midday Wednesday, then becoming mostly cloudy, a windy day, and a chance of light snow, with a high in the mid-30s. I'm Kevin Lavery.
Well, Earl's got to step out of the room for a moment, so Aaron, the engineer, is going to step in and discuss some more football. Obviously, the NFL football playoffs are obviously well underway, and we had some games yesterday going on yesterday, which, you know what, New England dominated Houston once again. That wasn't really too much of an exciting game. But the one that I thought was the most exciting was the Baltimore and Denver game. That, if any of you caught any of the games, go ahead and please call in. Please don't call in currently. So I'm sorry right now. Earl stepped out, so unfortunately I wouldn't be able to patch you through. But the Baltimore and Denver game, it was tough to root, I guess, for either team or against either team for the mere fact of having, you know, now I'm drawing a blank, but obviously had Peyton Manning for Denver. You know, whether he comes back, I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see. It's kind of sad to see one of the greatest quarterbacks, arguably, to play the game, possibly end his career like that. You know, and then you got Ray Lewis on the Baltimore side, and if he caught the end of the game, you know, he dropped to his knees and started crying. I mean, that's the kind of emotion that this guy has always displayed, you know, throughout the years. You know, that's just who he is as a football player. Some people don't care for him for other, you know, I guess personal reasons. But, you know, he's one of the, you know, greatest linebackers to ever play the game. And, you know, I'm happy for him that his career is continuing. But obviously they have a tough road ahead against New England in the, championship. So and then on the other side, you got Atlanta went ahead and beat Seattle. So Seattle's, I guess, sort of run with a rookie quarterback came to an end. You know, with Ryan at the helm for Atlanta, and you know, so now you got San Francisco took care of business against Green Bay. So you know, now it's Atlanta and San Francisco on the NFC side. So that's what the NFL playoffs looks like. And I think all four teams, to be honest with you, have a great chance of getting in to the Super Bowl. I would say the strongest currently right now looks like New England, but you know, Baltimore is obviously playing with a lot of passion behind Ray Lewis. San Francisco, I don't know. I think they would be the least to have a chance to get to the Super Bowl. Atlanta's looking good, but I'm kind of looking like New England is. They just seem focused and ready to take another championship. I don't know. I don't know if I can count anymore how many championships they can win that they've won so many. But yeah. So that I mean that's currently where the NFL's at, Earl.
Well, that's the thing. You know, New England hasn't won any in a long time. So they've gone 0-4 with quite a few. So I'm sort of. It's funny. Ever since I read that book, Spygate, it's turned my attention away from New England, and they just haven't been that strong to me. So I'm going to be looking at. I know. I like Atlanta. They're pretty good, and the other two teams are pretty good as well. So they've got some pretty tough teams. Now I got a question here. If you can choose now, which four teams of the Big Ten would make it to the Final Four? Which four teams, or would make it four, make it to the Final Four or Sweet 16? So which four teams would you have?
Well, that's a tough question, especially this early in the season. But, I mean, if you look at the standings, I mean, it's pretty stacked. I mean, Indiana and Wisconsin, as far as league play is concerned, are the only ones that are unbeaten. So Indiana and Wisconsin are both 3-0. Then you got Michigan, Minnesota, Michigan State, and Ohio State all at 3-1. And then after that, you got Purdue at 2-2, and then everyone else under that, Illinois, Iowa, Northwestern, Nebraska, and Penn State are all below 500. So if you just go by that, I guess you would have to say Indiana, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota. But that's not who I'm going to pick. If I had to sit here and pick who I was going to go with now, I would go ahead and pick Ohio State. You know, great players and great coach. You know, those are two things right there. I'm going to go ahead and say Michigan. I think Michigan does deserve the spot that they're at, but I think they're a little bit. I don't want to say overrated because they didn't really play anyone tough on their schedule right away. Michigan State had some tough games, and obviously Michigan lost the other day, yesterday I believe, or Saturday, whenever it was, to Ohio State by a couple points. So, granted, it was on the road, and it's the Big Ten, you know, best league in the best conference in the league right now. So, Ohio State, I would still go with Michigan. I'm not 100% sold on Wisconsin yet. Indiana overall is 15-1, so I'd have to go with Indiana being my third team. After that, I'd probably have to say Minnesota. I mean, Minnesota looks great. I haven't seen this, you know, Minnesota look this great in a while. So, you know, but they have a heck of a coach. So that's who I would go with, you know, to get to the Final Four. I don't remember the exact question, but those basically would be my top teams. Whether they actually would get there, I don't know. But the Big Ten is going to do a great showing this year in the tournament. At least I hope, you know, and I would expect that most people probably would agree that they, you know, are the ones to sort of kind of control the tournament. I just hope that, however the team's fare as far as, you know, records are concerned, that someone doesn't, they don't have to play each other. I'm going to get it back to you, Earl. We got a caller coming in.
Okay. I would look at some of the same teams that you look at, except I would put one team in that no one is giving any credit for, but they play awfully, awfully hard, and they give everybody a tough go, and that's 8-8 Purdue. I'll be watching out for Purdue for the rest of the year because they really play tough basketball. So I put them in there just in case because they play so hard when we look at Purdue. And we got a caller on the line. And let's see. We go to the phones. Hello, you're on the air.
How you doing there, Earl? I know you ate some ham or something, man. That's probably why you're choking. Or you ate some meat. I know. You ate your meat too fast, or you microwave your food and you didn't get it all done.
I don't think I had any food at all, to be honest with you.
All right, then. Well, drink some cran apple juice, cran grape juice. That'll help. Hey, Earl, I got to ask you about the Big Ten basketball. What I asked is Wisconsin in first place. Now, how could what's the difference between basketball and football? Can you build a team with not with three-star, four-star recruits in football or basketball and still compete like on a high level like Wisconsin can?
Oh, sure you can. In football and all you need is three or four players or three or four good players. You don't have to have superstars. In football, you need a lot of superstars. You need a lot of very good players. But in basketball, you can get by with three or four just good players or average players. You don't need those superstars in basketball.
Because I'm looking at Bo Ryan's team. He only got like a top 50 player on his team, and his team's always be at the echelon of the top of the Big Ten Conference. I know Wisconsin's not a recruiting magnet like some other Big Ten schools, or even some of the Catholic schools in the bigger cities. Do you see the day where schools like Georgetown, St. John's, or UAD, you know, Catholic schools, little small, Seton Hall, those kind of schools getting their own league?
Well, they're talking about getting a league now, getting a 7-team league. So we'll see that one day. But you know, the other teams out there, they get good players. That's the thing. There are so many good players in this country that you can always get a couple of good basketball players, and that's all you need. One or two or three, and you can put together a pretty good team. So if you do that, you can fight anybody in the conference if you've got a good team.
Okay, this is the last question. I'll probably move it on. Since hockey is back and everything, do you think the fans are going to forgive the players?
Yes, they always do.
It seems like I'm reading the Detroit papers. They have nothing but a lot of hockey coverage since the lockout is over with. And it's just like you hardly ever hear the fans calling in saying, well, they said we'll go to a game. If we'll go to more games if we can afford it. They really don't have that visceral, you know, the feelings are not visceral towards the hockey players. Like, well, the basketball players, you hear more grumbling from their fans and baseball people and football people, but you never hear toward the hockey people. And I just want to know, one of these days, is one of these sports leagues going to constantly alienate the fans to no end, then the fans going to really turn away, or this is never going to happen because we watching it on TV and we need something to watch on TV besides reality television? Thanks for letting me speak, and you recover from your hiccups. Thank you.
And the thing is, I don't know if sports fans will ever turn away from their team. We're so hooked on our teams in sports. I don't know if we'll ever get away from it. But the team, if you love a certain team, you're going to love a certain team irregardless, and that's going to be your team. So how do you see that, Aaron? Do you see any way where fans will ever turn away from their team?
Absolutely not. No reason at all. No, I mean, it's not going to happen. I think it's kind of an economic sort of how we, you know, I hate to bring economics and sports together, but I'm going to do that. You know, it's a supply and demand, you know, a fan demands, it's hockey, you know, team, a fan demands it's football, you know, team. Fan demands whatever sport they're into. Well, they're going to do what they're going to do to get that demand. You know, they demand that. So the supplier, in this case, the leagues, coaches, players, whatever you want to call it, they're going to supply it. Well, the owners or, you know, the people that are making the big bucks, well, they know that. They're not dumb. They know that. So they're going to do whatever it takes to keep increasing their profits. Why? Because we, as the people that are demanding it, need it. And so, hey, oh, tickets went up $10. That's cool. I don't like it. I'll gripe about it for a couple months, but I'll be there. You know why? Because I need it. I need that fix, you know? Until the day where, I mean, something drastic would have to happen, which it's not going to happen. No one's going to make a decision and say, okay, Earl and Aaron, tickets for a Red Wings game, just to get the most, you know, the farthest seats away from the ice are going to be $8,000. You know, that's not going to happen. What they'll do is, I guess, they'll kind of nickel and dime you in a sense. You know, it's not like they're going to increase it so drastic that people aren't going to come. Oh, this year we've increased ticket prices by 50 cents or a quarter or whatever the case may be. The reason being is because, you know, they don't need to do a large increase in something. Why? Because people are always going to be coming. Now, you know, that's not true for every scenario. And obviously, I'm not a manager by any means. And so maybe what I just said was completely bogus. But the reality is we demand that as consumers, that sport. And we're going to, most people who are fans or enjoy it are going to do what they need to do to get that enjoyment. So something drastic would have to happen. Hockey season is back in form. It's getting underway. Yeah, I'm going to be there waiting for that first Red Wings game. I'm excited for it. Am I upset that, you know, over half the season is lost? Absolutely. Am I still going to go watch a game? Absolutely. Am I going to forget that there was a lockout in a couple months? Absolutely. I mean, it doesn't, you know, my demand is now back. So, you know, it doesn't matter. So it's there. It's back. Great. It's awesome. Granted, it's going to be a shortened season, of course. You know, it's going to be there now for a handful of years now that the agreement goes till 2016 or something. So, if they keep supplying it, no matter what it is, we're going to keep consuming it. It's that simple.
And I have to agree with you because the fans love their sports, and they're not going to get rid of it. They love their sports so much, and yes, we'll always have a bunch of sports for fans, and that's the opium of the masses, and so we'll keep having it until forever, unless somehow the fans just get tired of it. I don't see them getting tired of it.
Oh, we got a caller coming in.
Okay. We'll do that as we get close to it. 3-5. Let me tell you, give you the number if you want a chance to win tickets to Michigan State hockey. Ticket is area code 517-884-4783. 517-884-4783. And that's the ticket. If you want to call in and have your chance to win hockey tickets, once again, 517-884-4783. Let's go to the phones. And Dave, how you doing?
Earl, I'm going to give your voice a little break here.
Okay.
I wonder, though, have you lost your mind?
No.
Earl.
Yep.
The question was about who would you now consider maybe the top four teams in the Big Ten? And you put Purdue in there?
Yep, they play very hard. They're hard. All the teams play hard, and they're one that really plays hard. So I wouldn't be surprised anything that happens.
Well, I would be shocked if Purdue's in the top four. I mean, this is a team that lost to Eastern Michigan this year.
Yep, but they're starting to play better. See, you look at back then, and those that's fine. But look at the way they're playing now. They're playing much better, and so you have to just check them out because they're a tough team.
Well, if you're right, you can really brag because you're about the only one, I think, right now who thinks that. But maybe you'll be right. I don't think so. But, you know, I would agree with your cohort there that the top four in the Big Ten right now, actually the top three probably is Indiana, Michigan, and Minnesota, and then Ohio State may be a little bit behind. But obviously they won yesterday, and I do have to wonder, as a Michigan fan, might it have been a good idea to play more than one road game in the non-conference?
It probably would have. It probably would have, but you just never know.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the flip side is that Duke played a really tough non-conference schedule, and yet they lost when they had a tough road game this weekend at NC State. But still, I mean, Michigan in the first half did not look ready for that atmosphere at all.
That's true. And that's the way you have to look at it. I mean, hopefully they'll be ready. They've got a lot of the games left, so they can. They certainly got time to be ready for the Big Tens.
Well, and the other thing, looking at the schedule, I would warn my fellow Michigan fans: be prepared for the possibility that at the halfway mark of the Big Ten race, Michigan could be three games or so behind Indiana. And a lot of people may be panicking, but don't panic, because the schedule is overloaded for Michigan in the first half with really tough road games, whereas Indiana plays no tough road games in the first half. And then the second half, it reverses, and Indiana plays a brutal second-half schedule. So Michigan obviously goes to Minnesota next. That's going to be really tough. And then they end the first half of the season the night before the Super Bowl when they play at Indiana. And if they could somehow win one of those two, it'd be huge.
Well, as you know, everything always balances itself out. I mean, it might be a difficult time in the first half, but somehow it always balances itself out.
Well, it usually does, although it's not like the old days, Earl. You and I remember when the Big Ten actually had 10 teams and they played a double round robin. Back then, it was perfectly fair. Everybody played everybody twice, so you couldn't complain about an advantage or a disadvantage. Now, what you have in football and basketball, I think it's kind of ridiculous, is you have so many teams that you only play once, and in some cases, it can really work out as a huge advantage for one team and disadvantage for the other. Although I think this year, the way it works out in the Big Ten, it's pretty fair. The top teams pretty much play each other twice. Minnesota may gain a little bit of an edge. I think they just play Michigan once and they play Ohio State once. So they might have a slight edge, but the other teams, Michigan, Indiana, Michigan State, Ohio State, I think they all play each other twice.
Yep, so we'll just have to wait and see and watch and see how it ends up.
All right, well, I'll be waiting to see if Purdue's in that top four. I'll keep on you about that, Earl.
Okie dokie. We'll see you later, buddy. Okay, bye-bye. And that's our friend Dave from out in Arizona. The time now is 42 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
On the next Fresh Air, Gene Robinson reflects on his time as the first openly gay bishop in the Episcopal Church. He's just retired. For years, Robinson received death threats. One suspect was arrested with photos of Robinson.
He had scrawled across them, "Save the church, kill the bishop," and he had a sawed-off shotgun and tons of ammunition.
Join us.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR. If you want to call...
For the rest of the afternoon, look for a chance of flurries, otherwise mostly sunny skies and a high in the mid-20s. Then partly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 15 degrees. Partly sunny for Tuesday, highs in the upper 20s, and then mostly sunny till midday Wednesday, then becoming mostly cloudy with a chance of light snow showers and a high in the mid-30s.
And give us a call. We have tickets to give away. Area code 517-884-4783. That's 517-884-4783 for your chance to win MSU hockey tickets right here on AM 870. 517-884-4783. And now we'll turn our attention to Jim Comperoni, talk Michigan State football and basketball with Jim. So give us a call right here on AM 870. So we got Jim on. Jim, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, great. What's going on, Earl?
Hey, we got a lot. As you know, it's football season. Will be starting soon. How do you feel about this new spring training gauge that's coming up?
The spring what now?
The new spring game coming up.
You know,
with football.
Well, they got to figure out who the running back is. That's the main thing. They've got a handful of people that they're looking at, and they're all going to get some reps. I mean, the Tompkins kid, he's a little on the small side and a little banged up a little bit during his redshirt year, but he's got a lot of speed. He'll get a look. You know, the incoming freshman won't be there until August, so it's a time for the guys that are already there, like Nick Hill, to try to do some things. And Jeremy Langford is a guy we keep hearing good things about. Apparently he played well during bowl practice again, but they just wanted to ride Le'Veon Bell the whole time because that was such a tight game against TCU. They gave him all the carries, which I understand. So I think Hill, Langford, and, Tompkins are the guys that will get the initial crack at it. And then, once August comes in, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see, like Darian Harris. I've heard some rumblings that he might get a look. He's been a second string linebacker for a couple of years. But when he redshirted, he played scout team running back, and he impressed some people when he portrayed the former running back at Iowa, Coker, the big back that used to be at Iowa, Coker. Darian Harris portrayed him for the scout team a couple of years ago and was excellent. Darian Harris is a second-string linebacker that went into last August. First string kind of nudged ahead of Tawan Jones. Then Tawan Jones won the job back. We saw Darian Harris quite a bit on special teams, but he only played mop-up duty second-team linebacker. Good defensive player, but he was a star running back in high school. He's got some size, and in Michigan State style of play on offense, he might be a guy that might give them some direct run north and south physical toughness. I don't know what's going to happen in the spring in terms of those guys. Now, in August, you'll have Gerald Holmes coming in, good-looking running back from the Flint area, and R.J. Shelton, kid from Wisconsin, coming in. Those guys will be true freshmen. Also, Delton Williams, the kid from Pennsylvania. He's a could be a big back type of guy, athlete at about 6'1 and a half, 210. Could be a big safety. Could also be a direct run type running back. You know, the guy, Nick Hill just hasn't quite gotten, hasn't had a lot of success at running back. He's gotten a handful of carries here and there the last couple of years. And he had a nice run against Nebraska. But I don't know if Nick Hill is, he's got a lot to prove this spring. I'll put it that way. He's given it everything he has, but he's a little guy. I don't know, maybe he's more suited to be more of a spread offense type running back. You know, Michigan State, the way they play, they almost need a bigger back that's going to break through a little bit of contact and wear you down and get more yards in the second half. That's the way Michigan State kind of plays. You know, maybe Nick Hill will prove he can fit in well in this system, but he's going to get a lot of carries this spring, and he's got as much to prove as anybody.
What about quarterback? Do you see that as an open position, or is that one that's relatively closed?
You know, they say it's open after what happened in the bowl game. You know, Maxwell was replaced by Connor Cook, and Cook came in and did okay. He didn't do anything necessarily that Maxwell didn't do or hasn't done, but the fact that they went away from Maxwell speaks volumes about the confidence level the coaches have in Maxwell at that particular time, or the confidence they had in him at that particular time. They like his talent, but after 12 games going through the season, they just thought he was a little bit gun-shy in pulling the trigger on some things and making reads and seeing things downfield. So they went with Cook, and Cook, I'm not sure Cook was any better at those things, but at least Cook could pull it down and move the chains with his feet a little more readily, just a little more athletic than Maxwell. It certainly was strange, Earl. I mean, for those that were watching, it certainly turned out to be a winning combination, a winning formula for Michigan State. But to go through 12 games with one quarterback and basically two-thirds of the bowl game and make the change, it worked, and it was the right thing to do. But it's just, I don't know if I've ever seen a team go with one quarterback for 12 games and pull the plug. And I don't disagree. I think it was the right thing to do. It's just so strange that it turned out that way. Why did it turn out that way? Why do you stay with Maxwell? Because he has all kinds of talent. He has a great arm. He says all the right things, good leader and all those things. But, you know, some guys are gamers and some guys still need to prove it. And in the world of college football, he only gets, 12 games in a season. You only get the ball about 12 times a game. And maybe it takes that long to realize that a guy's not making the progress he needs to make. It'll be Cook. And then Tyler O'Connor's a kid that runs around. He's got a lot of arm talent also. You know, they redshirted him. They wanted to stick to that decision. I'm interested in him. I think there's a chance Tyler O'Connor beats both of them out.
He could, that's for sure. It'll be interesting to see, because I know there's just a lot of open competition. We know it looks like the offensive line is pretty solid. Other than that, do you think everything else is basically wide open after the offensive line?
Well, offensive line, there'll be some competition there too, because there's seven or eight guys coming back that have started before. So they've got to figure out. You know, Blake Treadwell ended the season pretty good at left guard, but now you have, Donovan Clark played pretty well against Michigan, did not play as well the next week at Wisconsin and was replaced. That was at left tackle, but, Clark can maybe move in to offensive guard and compete there a little bit. McDonald is gone. You have Travis Jackson coming back as a starting center. That could move Jack Allen back to one of the guard positions. There's good talent there. France and Berkeland played pretty well against TCU's defensive ends. Both of those defensive ends for TCU are going to be NFL players. They are outstanding. They gave up one or two sacks. One was on a tight end. It was not France's fault. By and large, the quarterbacks had pretty good amount of time to throw when they dropped back to pass. And, of course, they ran for a lot of yardage against TCU. So I think the offensive line ends the season on an uptick. They were dominant in the must-win situation at Minnesota. And an uptick with the guys that they had. Now you bring back Jackson and Fuamalafono T. And, I think the offensive line should be good. You know, observers of Michigan State football have been waiting 6 or 7 years for Michigan State's offensive line to take the next step. You know, the cupboard was a little bit bare when they came in terms of sophomores and freshmen. They were pretty good the first year under D'Antonio. After that, they kind of had to rebuild. And as they've rebuilt, they've had a lot of injuries and so forth. So now this year there should be, on one hand, no excuses. On another hand, as Mark Staten said after the bowl game, it would take terrible luck for them to be in another situation like that next year. So a lot of experience, a lot of guys that are proven players, maybe no standout superstars, but you know, some of those guys can maybe aspire to getting to that level during the offseason.
Okay, well, let's let's listen to a few other guys and hear what you have to say about some of the guys, some of the backups who might elevate to first string.
On the defensive side, they're returning so many players. So, they're returning all three linebackers. You know, you expected Jones, Bullen, and Nikos Allen to be one of the best linebacking crews in the country. And, each one of those guys still has a little bit of potential to get better, especially Tuan Jones. Defensive end with Golston being gone, there's going to be some competition there. You know, Joel Heath is a guy they're looking at possibly moving inside. He got on the field a little bit, but mainly it was Rush, Shalik Calhoun, and Golston. So Golston's gone now, so Shalik Calhoun and Rush look like they're going to be the starters. Calhoun's a guy that's got to continue to come along. You know, Denzel Drone will still be in the mix also, but Calhoun is the guy that's got some star ability there. Had a good month of bowl practice. When TCU faced their first third down situation, the third play of the game, Calhoun came onto the field as the first string nickel defensive end. He did not play that role during the season. He got on the field a little bit in reserve situations and also a little bit in the nickel defense, but that was the first time that he was the first string nickel defensive end. So Shalik Calhoun showed them a few things in the bowl game. He'll be a sophomore next year. I think he's on an uptick there a little bit. So, but he'll have to beat out, you know, Drone and Joel Heath are still around. And inside, you know, Tyler Hoover's coming back. Hoover got more and more time as the season progressed. He had some injuries earlier in the year. But Kittredge was a guy that came in and started earned a starting job for them. But by the end of the year, Hoover had replaced Kittredge a little bit. But Hoover and Kittredge are pretty good. Makaja Reynolds shows some good things. They're excited about Damon Knox. And then Lawrence Thomas will be moving into defensive tackle also. He played a handful of snaps in the bowl game, and they think he's got star capabilities at defensive tackle. I think there's good depth on the defensive line. Again, maybe no star power, but guys like Calhoun, Lawrence Thomas, and even Kittredge have the ability to become stars, standouts, like second-team All-Big Ten guys here in the near future. You know, Michigan State's defense was the best in the Big Ten in pretty much all categories, but they didn't really have, standout All-American-type performers. Johnny Adams had that type of ability but was hurt by injuries midway through the year, played through them, had a few problematic moments because of those injuries. Max Bolla was outstanding. But, you know, for a defense that was so good far and away statistically, it's strange that they didn't have the one or two, you know, All-America type guys. But that shows that the 11 as a whole are well-coached and work well together. And there's pretty good talent across the board on defense, and pretty much they're all coming back.
Okay. What about the cornerbacks? I mean, you know, we had Johnny Adams and DeQuest Denard. Are the cornerbacks, are they going to be close to being as good as those two were last year?
You know, Adams and Denard were supposed to be one of the best corner combinations in the country, and if Adams hadn't had to deal with those injuries, I think they would have proved to be that way, and I think Adams has a career coming in the NFL, and he'll get drafted, and he'll do well there. Denard. He'll come back for his senior year. I think he'll be excellent first team All Big Ten type of candidate. There'll be a competition for the other corner. You know, Trey Wayne's played a little bit in the bowl game, splitting time with Mitchell White, who moves on and graduates. So Trey Wayne's and a guy named Arjun Calhoun is a sophomore. They'll be competing. Calhoun is 6'2", 190, a bigger corner. Wayne's is described as being the fastest player on the team, so he got some valuable experience in the bowl game. So I think it's Denard and Wayne's will be the guys, and I would expect, I don't know if Wayne's will be as good as Adams right away, but, defensive back coaching, that's what D'Antonio does best. I think the corners will continue to be a strength, and that'll keep reloading there.
Let's turn our attention to basketball, because basketball has been a pretty interesting season. How do you see this basketball season falling out?
Well, they're in a big mosh pit of pretty good Big Ten teams. You know, I think every Big Ten team is pretty good at home. I mean, with their home games, and that's what it's been for a long, long time. Excuse me, look what Ohio State did against Michigan, the strong start they got out to. But a week earlier, Ohio State was laying an egg at Illinois, and then Illinois goes on the road, and they can't. You know, they have some tough losses to Purdue and Iowa. I think they're 1-3 in the Big Ten now. To think that Illinois is 1-3, and then one victory in the Big Ten was a blowout victory over Ohio State, who just beat the number 2 team in the country. That tells you all you need to know about the Big Ten from 1 to 10. I think there's 10 good teams. I think Iowa's pretty good. They're 1-3. They're 12-5 overall. You know, they probably should have beaten Michigan State that day. And, you know, Iowa, they had a tough schedule. That was kind of their problem. Now they'll have Wisconsin at home. Wisconsin's 3-0 because they've had a favorable schedule. They had a road game at Nebraska, home games against Illinois and Penn State, I think. So Wisconsin climbs 3-0, but they're ready to fall back to earth also. Starting with their trip to Iowa, I would expect midweek this week. I think Wisconsin 3-0 with an inflated record, and Iowa 1-3 with an undervalued record. I'm expecting Iowa to win that game, but maybe Bo Ryan's got them going again, and maybe we'll learn a lot about Wisconsin either way this week with that game at Iowa. You wouldn't think a road game to a team that's in 10th place would be that much of a litmus test, but in this league this year, I think it is.
What about Purdue? How do you figure them or look at them?
Well, the first thing Purdue people have to wonder is why they didn't recruit Glenn Robinson III. You know, what's he doing at Michigan? The first thing. That's so Matt Painter's got some questions to answer there. And they're 8-8 and 2-2. And, their road games, they played pretty well for a while against Michigan State, but when Michigan State started pulling ahead on them, I saw a Purdue team that was starting to quit a little bit. They played pretty good at home against Ohio State. They beat Penn State at home. Now they go to Nebraska. And Nebraska, I think, is better than their record. 0-4 in the Big Ten. They played pretty well for two-thirds of the game at Michigan. They played pretty well last night at East Lansing for most of the game. Purdue's young. The Hammonds kid looked real good here. But they've kind of had to reload with some younger guys. And, you know, a few years ago when they were a young and up-and-coming team, they were able to win enough games doing it that way. But this is not a good year to be a young team in the Big Ten. And I'm expecting Purdue to finish out one of the worst basketball seasons they've had in a few years this year.
Okay. Hey, Jim, it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And we'll get together again soon. And hopefully I'll be over these hiccups.
Thanks a lot.
Hey, thank you, Jim. Yep, talk to you later, buddy. Bye-bye. Hey, well, thank you all for listening, and thank you all for calling. I invite you to come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870. You've been listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR. Come back and join us tomorrow on AM 870.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.